All right, so welcome back to Healing the Earth Radio, and I'm on the air here with Cayetana from WeDo. Cayetana, how are you doing?
I'm good, yeah? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on the air.
Thank you for inviting me.
I wonder if to begin, do you want to introduce what WeDo exactly does?
Mm-hmm. So actually WeDo, the Women's Environment and Development Organization, was funded in 1992 by Congresswoman Bella Abzug. And it is a global advocacy organization that seeks to promote social and economic justice, human rights for all, peace and a healthy environment. And this is done through gender equality. I mean, we believe that gender equality is essential to achieve this. And it's important, therefore, to ensure political empowerment of women and so that they are able to participate at all decision-making levels equally with men. So our work is really, focusing on that, on the need to have women empowered and sharing decision-making positions equally with men. And so we have different programs at WeDo. We work on gender and governance program that works to achieve gender balance in the participation of women and men in all areas and all levels of public life. We also have the Economic and Social Justice Program, which focuses on the consequences that our economic system has on women and how to change these. We have a new this is a program that we're developing much more, which is the U.S. Policy Program, focusing mainly on the implementation of the CEDA Treaty, which is the treaty dealing with women's rights in several U.S. states. And finally, we have the Sustainable Development Program, which is the program I'm dealing with, and we work mainly on environmental issues, although we also tackle economic and social issues as well, and always with this focus on gender and women particularly.
Great. It's excellent work. Maybe to begin our interview, can you talk about the crossovers between gender and climate change? Mm-hmm. Like, how does one's gender relate to the ways in which they're disproportionately affected by all the dynamics of climate change?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, what we understand by climate change is basically the effects it has on, you know, on the world. And one of the most well-known, of course, is the natural disasters. And I think we had very sad examples, unfortunately, particularly during in 2005 with the tsunami, and also with other, you know, natural disasters that happened in Central America, but also, as you know, in the U.S. In New Orleans. So we understand that natural disasters affect people because of floods, because houses are destroyed, and so they can kill people. And of course, the victims are men, women, and children. But we have also to take into account that the magnitude of a disaster is also influenced by the political, economic, and social cultural context. And in this regard, it's important, especially if we think about developing countries where most of the disasters had taken place, we have to take into account that there is a high rate of poverty in these countries, and that 70% of the poor in the world are women. And in addition to that, we have to say that their vulnerability is accentuated by race, ethnicity, and age. So when we think about natural disasters, we have to take the gender aspects as well, because we will see that women and men are affected both by natural disasters, but differently because of traditional, socially based roles and responsibilities. Mm. So what happens, actually? In the research that we have been doing here at WeDo together with other organizations, we have identified three gender-specific characteristics to climate change. One of them is that women are affected differently, but also more severely by climate change and natural disasters because of these social roles, discrimination, and poverty. The second one is that women are still underrepresented in decision-making about climate change, which makes it very difficult to have decisions at that level that affect women in an appropriate way. And there are also gender biases in carbon emissions. And so it's very important to tackle the issue in this way, because we understand that, I mean, women and men are different, and in this respect, women have something also to bring in policies regarding climate change and natural disasters. They have an expertise to contribute, and also for the sake of democracy and human rights, it's important to include them as part of the, you know, the human community. So what are how women are affected differently and more severely regarding natural disasters and climate change? So specifically in developing countries, for instance, women are more affected. And as I mentioned, one of the causes is the social and economic situations of these countries or these communities. And so what happens is that very often, for instance, women have these traditional roles at, you know, as homekeepers, as taking care of the children and so on. And even in some countries, they are the ones who are responsible, for instance, to fetch water, to collect fuel and fodder, and so on. And so when a natural disaster happens, very often it's very hard to, you know, find water in the place where we used to find it, or collect fodder in the areas where we used to find it. So women have to walk even more distances in order to get that. And this affects this affects the time that they have to dedicate they could have to dedicate to other activities, like, for instance, education, working, and so on. And at the same time, it exposes women to more risks, like, for instance, you know, sexual harassment, rape, and so on. So this is really a problem. Another problem is migration. So when natural disaster happens, very often men migrate because since climate change is affected, this generates resource shortages and affecting, you know, the market. So men migrate in order to find a better, you know, economic situation, and they leave women at home with the children. And this is because, of course, very often because of traditional beliefs that women cannot, you know, live on their own and, to go somewhere else on their own and find a job on their own. And so they stay at home, and because they have to take care of the children, they have to take care of the household, they have also to find some kind of, job in order to have their needs, the household needs covered. All the time that they spend on these responsibilities do not allow them to spend time on other activities that can, you know, help them to increase their knowledge, to have a different, you know, to contribute in a different way to their communities. Another aspect that we also found was very important is that women are very often in charge of agricultural activities. And so natural disasters and climate change affect food security because climate change can reduce crop yields and food production. And so it affects food security for women, but also their livelihood strategies. And therefore, the right to food of these people is affected as well. Another aspect is that, as I mentioned earlier, women are primary caregivers, so they take care of the children, of the elderly, and this is also true for developed countries. And so because of these domestic activities, combined with income-earning activities, again, the burden on women regarding these household activities is really very, very, it's very important. And so it's very hard for them to, for instance, have other job opportunities in order to improve their lives and also to, again, you know, educate themselves and so on and so forth. So this is these are very, very important topics that we have been dealing with. And the last one that has been very well, I think, described, particularly during the tsunami, is that women, since they are not allowed to participate in the public sphere, and this is due to cultural, of course, beliefs and practices, very often they are not informed properly when a natural disaster happens, which means that very often, these women had to stay at home. Well, they stayed at home because it was impossible for them to think that they could leave their homes without their husbands. And the other problem also was that these women very often are the ones who wait for men, especially when they are the wives of fishermen, and they were waiting for their husbands. And actually, of course, when the disaster happened, they were really waiting for their husbands to come, and they were much more. We had more women victims of the floods. We had more women victims of the floods because they were waiting for their husbands in the seashore. So that was also a problem. So this is more or less the situation that women encounter in different parts of the world. I'm not developing that much regarding the developed world because the situation is a bit different. But as I explained a bit earlier, there are some similarities, particularly because there are also in the developed world domestic tasks that are, in principle, tasks that women have to care of. And so this affects their capacity to develop themselves and to be part also of the decision, to participate in the decision-making level positions.
That was an excellent introduction.
Hmm?
That was an excellent introduction.
Thank you.
Yeah, I find it very interesting that most of these problems in climate change and disaster situations arise from already existing power imbalances.
Exactly, yes.
And there's something that I see popping up a lot in the paper Engendering the Energy and Climate Change Agenda, the topic of energy poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you can explain, you mentioned this quite a bit in the different scenarios you outlined women in developing countries go through. I wonder if you can talk about what the concept of energy poverty and how, like, all the different manifestations of that.
Well, the concept of energy poverty, it's very much, it has been developed particularly in developed countries because there is this, as for developing countries, in developed countries, women, generally speaking, have a lower income than men, and you have also these situations where women are, taking off the children alone. So, for instance, in cases of, single mothers or families that have split for some reason and so on. And so the financial situation of women is much more, not that easy as the situation of men. And so, for instance, if you have you own a house, or you are you live in a house which is not very well equipped in terms of, energy supply, or it's not very well the isolation is not very good. Of course, you need to spend more energy, but the problem is that if your income does not allow you to spend that amount of energy that you need, for instance, for the heater, to cook and everything, then we consider that people live in a situation of energy poverty. I don't know if I answered your question properly. Yes.
You did. I wonder if we can talk about some of the main strategies for change that you and we do work with, like different ways of empowering women. Mm-hmm. In all these different local situations.
Yes. Well, actually, as I said earlier in my speech, one of the important topics in order to try to resolve partly at least the problem of coping with climate change and also resolving the problem of energy accessibility is that we need to have women being representing at the decision-making level. So, And this actually has been supported and claimed by, for instance, Agenda 21 that came from the Earth Summit in 1992. And Agenda 21 is sort of guidelines in order to achieve sustainable development. And they recognize the role of women as principal actors in the management of natural resources. So it's not only a question of how to deal with natural resources, but also to decide on policies in order to have, for instance, environment management. So the thing is that, women are underrepresented. There are several reasons for that. One of them, of course, is these cultural reasons that enable women to participate, but also because the content of the nature of the discussions around climate change, and this is very obvious during the UN the UNFCCC, so the UN Framework on Climate Change discussions. This is very highly technical and economic, and unfortunately, for many, many reasons, women do not access, you know, technical knowledge, and I mean through, you know, university studies and so on. So women do not have do not access to this knowledge, and so it's very hard for them to be involved in these discussions. On the other hand, climate change issues and energy issues should not be only technical discussions. They should also cover the social aspects of that, because ultimately the people who are affected are human beings, both women and men. And so because of the differences I've been exposing earlier, these policies need to take into account the differences, the gender differences between men and women, because all these projects that are supposedly to be implemented through the Kyoto Protocol and through many other mechanisms do not take into account the gender specificities. So if you think about, for instance, poverty reduction, how can you deal with poverty reduction if you don't take into account half of the population in this world, bearing in mind that 70% of the poor are women? So this is really a problem. And we try to address this, of course, by, of course, through our advocacy work at different UN processes. And so right now, what we try to do is to sensitize through these type of documents, not only public opinion, but also political leaders and government representatives, especially at the UN fora. And so, and there is, of course, a lot of lobby work that is being done, I mean, that is being done and will be done around these forums. But the problem is that since this is a pretty new issue in terms of the linkages between climate change and gender, the amount of information that we have in order to, you know, make our case is not very easy to find. So one of the things that women group that has been present at the last conference of the parties of the UNFCCC, one of the things that we did in terms of activities was to organize a workshop on the need to develop research around climate change and gender. So one of the questions, for instance, is what do we need to know about gender and climate change to influence UNFCCC negotiations? Because it's very important also to know that unlike most of the UN international treaties, the UNFCCC doesn't mention gender in any of the sentences of the treaty and of the Kyoto Protocol. Mm. And this is very serious because, as I said, many of the projects that are going to be implemented need to take this into account, and they are not doing it so far. They are concentrating more on the technical and economic aspects of that.
Yeah.
So as I said, one of the ways to do that is to start a research on this, a serious research. It will take some time, but, you know, I think it's important to do it. And another one, of course, is to try as much as possible, because it's also a problem of resources, to develop capacity building among women at the community level, and so they become more aware not only of their rights in terms of, you know, human rights, but also to train them in order to for them to be able to participate in decision making levels, but also on the more technical issues of, you know, environmental issues. So this is basically how we deal how we are dealing right now with the topic. And in terms of the of women's participation in the past on climate change issues, as I said, this is a pretty new topic. It happened in previous conferences of the UNFCCC, but it's very, very hard, very difficult because, also because the UNFCCC doesn't recognize the women's groups as one of the groups that they recognize, like environment, NGOs, indigenous peoples, and so on. So the space that we have is really very, very reduced. And also because, as I said, the discussion goes much more around technicalities rather than on social issues. But it's true also that the last conference of the parties, the one that took place in Montreal last year, in December last year, mm-hmm. Started to deal with this topic through these adaptation, you know, policies that are part of the climate change, different policies in order to resolve that. Mm. I mean, it's very new. Women are not totally very well organized on these issues, but we are trying actually to do that.
That's excellent. I'm curious to know, what does it look like to you to have climate policy shaped from a gender perspective with that kind of analysis?
Sorry, say it again?
What does it look like to you to have climate policy shaped with a gender analysis? Like, what would it look like to you, and what kind of things do you think are the most important, first and foremost?
So what are the criteria, actually?
Mm-hmm.
So the criteria in order to be able to make the link between gender and climate change.
The criteria, and also, like, what do you envision if there were a climate policy shaped with this analysis?
Oh wow, that's very difficult.
That's a big
question.
One. I know.
That's really a very difficult question. Well, in any case, I think that regarding the UN. Well, the UNFCCC, but particularly the Kyoto Protocol, I think that it's really important to consider in the different mechanisms that are going to, well, that are being implemented now or starting to be implemented now, to really take into account the gender differences. Because it's very hard to implement a project without taking into account half of the people, you know, of a community. And so this is, and of course, this should be done through not only recognizing, but also involving women in the, as I said, decision-making levels, involving them in the way to shape the different policies and decisions around, mitigation and especially adaptation policies, so that the needs of everybody are taken into account and people can really develop themselves, and so hopefully they will achieve a certain degree of development. And also I think that another problem is the economic models right now that focus much more on the on gains and gains, especially for investors, and do not take into account that much the need for people, and not only a certain percentage of people in certain parts of the world, but everybody is not, part of this economic model, because, I mean, the way it works cannot take into account everybody, and so the share of the of the gains are not properly, distributed among the different countries and the population. So we have a very particular economic model that I believe destroys also the certain social aspects of our the way we humans live, do not recognize the situation of women, and so on and so forth. So I think these are the issues that need to be tackled and should be considered in way we should deal with climate change policies.
Mm-hmm. Where do you have the greatest hope in change coming from, like, given that our economic system is quite inherently flawed, and mm-hmm. There's these certain top-down levels of change, like the United Nations. Where do you see the most important change coming from, like, realistically, in the coming years?
So the most important change is coming from the UN?
No, just where in general, whether do you think that the most important change realistically can come from the UN, or come from localized governments, or come from women organizing on the grassroots level, or what do you think needs to happen?
Wow, that's also a hard question. I don't know. I think that, well, questioning, as I said, this economic model should be a starting point, but of course it has lots of implications that we cannot even imagine.
Mm.
And I think that one reason to think like that is, for instance, this Kyoto Protocol is really shaped within this economic model. So we are, instead of putting it into question, we are following it, and this has, of course, I mean, this might have consequences that are not necessarily the ones that we would like to see, like, for instance, improving really the situation of the gas emissions reduction and so on. So this is one thing. The other is that, of course, communities mobilize themselves, but the capacity to do that is very difficult, and it varies from country to country, from region to region, because of the political situations of each of those countries. So mobilizing, yes, it happens in some areas, it doesn't happen that much in others, and for instance, civil society is not that well organized in Africa, it's much more better organized in Latin America, but at the same time we know that although things are changing apparently in Latin America, the situation is not easy at all, and you have this economic pressure of not only political and governmental pressure, but you also have the private sector through the multinationals pressure on these governments, so that some decisions that are more favorable to the promotion of human rights, of environmental sustainability, are not being taken into account because of these pressures. And so on the one hand, we have countries that really need to have incomes coming from abroad, and on the other, if they want to do so, they have to open their markets, they have to open their countries without, you know, being even able to defend what they have to defend, because this should be the responsibility of countries, is to defend the lives of the citizens and of course, by extension, the environment and so on. So this needs to change, but of course, the changes are not coming right now. As we can see, I mean, the situation is even more difficult. Multinationals are having much more and more weight in the decisions that are taken at the international level. And this, I think, is illustrated by the development of international and regional trade agreements. And we know that most of them, if not all of them, put the investors' rights first and human rights after that. Secondary in priority. And this is, of course, this shouldn't happen, but it's happened right now. And I don't see exactly how this can change, you know. Of course, we can fight against poverty, but how much we can fight against poverty, considering all the problems related to, for instance, gender, so the relationship between women and men. And so, I don't know, I think it's a very hard question, and I don't see right now real changes coming in, for this world.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough situation going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough situation.
Yes, I think so, and we know it because of, well, coming back to the climate change and natural disasters, even in the U.S., I mean, I don't know that much about, the situation of New Orleans, but, it was disastrous, and mm-hmm. you have, and of course, there were lots of debates on the fact that this was related to the fact that this was a state of black communities and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. So you have this race issue appearing again. Some people said that a lot of women were raped during the disaster. It was put into question because some others said that this is a way to, exacerbate racism,
mm-hmm.
Implying that black men are really, rapers and
mm-hmm.
Things like that. So, but in any case, what we know is that the situation has not overcome yet, and there are lots of economic problems there. There is a lot of migration to other states, as far as I could understand. And so this is creating a real problem. And even if the U.S. is one of the most developed countries in the world, it seems that they are not really coping very well with this problem. So this, I think, is an illustration that, the situation is not very easy right now. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's the same in many, many parts of the world.
Yeah, what I think is One of the most tragic things is that those who are the most marginalized and least privileged are the first and worst to be affected by these kind of changes. And we see that in New Orleans, and we see that all over the world.
Exactly, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and what I wanted to stress is that among these marginalized, women are even more marginalized for all these gender, based reasons that I exposed earlier.
Mm-hmm. We have about 5 minutes left, Kayatana, and I'm wondering if you'd like to conclude things, wrap things up a little bit.
Well, yes, actually, I would like to just, because the work of WeDo is also to at the level of human rights, and I think it's important to conclude to highlight that these natural disasters due to climate change, the lack of appropriate policies that are being implemented in different parts, I mean, in the world regarding climate change, these affect the human rights, and I want to highlight particularly women's rights. And so, and this was something that was reported by the Gender Disaster Workshop in Ankara that took place in 2001. They say that, for instance, economic and social rights are violated in disaster processes if mitigation, relief, and reconstruction policies do not benefit women and men equally. And this is, for instance, what I tried to illustrate by saying that the projects of, for instance, the clean development mechanisms of the Kyoto Protocol, if they don't take into account the gender aspects, probably they're going to fail. The right of adequate health care is also violated when relief efforts do not meet the needs of specific physical and mental health needs throughout the women's life cycle. And, for instance, we can talk about trauma, we can talk about, you know, women's particularly health needs when a disaster happens and so on. Also, the right to security of persons is violated when disasters happen and, for instance, women are raped or they are subject to violence by men. And another one is, for instance, civil and political rights are denied to women if they cannot fully participate into the decision-making level processes that will affect them in one way or the other. So I just want to conclude that this is really a human rights issue, and this is, of course, it affects men. I think that women and men have to work together, but we have to take into account the differences and to involve both of them equally. And just to perhaps end in a positive note, there is an example in the, I think it was in Honduras. Yes, in Honduras, there is a region called La Masica who reported no deaths after Hurricane Mitch in 1998. And one of the reasons for this is that men and women were equally involved in the preparation for disasters and also on early warning systems and hazard management. And so when when a Hurricane Mitch hit that particular region, the way that people, you know, managed to organize themselves in order to, you know, not to be affected by that, was really very, took into account both women and men needs, women and men realities, and the exchange of information that took place there really helped women and men to report no deaths, apparently, when Hurricane Mitch hit that region. So it's very important. I mean, this is an illustration that when you involve men and women equally, there is a high chance that at least the consequences of these natural disasters aren't going to be as bad as they are right now.
In a little while we just might see the end is near, but it will be too close to recognize. But we keep looking for that light to reappear. It will be lost inside the shadow of our eyes. It will be lost inside the lies.